Kurt?
Here.
Mark?
Here.
Nancy?
Yes.
Eric?
Excused.
Cindy?
Excused.
Bob?
Here.
Jay?
Here.
Okay, we have a quorum present. We have four assembly members in the room and one on the phone. It's now time for the voluntary Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, now it's time for the administration of oath for our two new police officers. So Kelly or Mindy, are you guys going to do that? Welcome to Petersburg.
David, will you come forward, please? You can go up there, John. Go for it. David Plagans, do you solemnly affirm that you will support and defend the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of the State of Alaska and the ordinances of the Petersburg Borough, and that you will honestly, faithfully, and impartially perform the duties of police officer for the Petersburg Borough, Alaska, to the best of your ability?
I do.
Congratulations. Welcome to Petersburg.
Okay, raise your right hand. Louis Wachter, do you solemnly affirm that you will support and defend the Constitution of the United States, the Constitution of the State of Alaska, and the ordinances of the Petersburg Borough, and that you will honestly, faithfully, and impartially perform the duties of police officer for the Petersburg Borough, Alaska, to the best of your ability?
Congratulations. For those in the listening audience, we have just sworn in our two new police officers, Plagans and Wachter, I believe. I probably mispronounced them, but that's my attempt. So welcome to Petersburg. Okay, and just for the record, we have one more assembly member on the phone. Cindy Logadakis is with us, so we will move forward. At this point, before we get into the non-compliance hearing, I'd like to move forward amendment or approval of today's meeting agenda. We need to add to the agenda the possibility of an executive session, and we do not have to give a three-day notice to that, so I would entertain a motion to amend the agenda and add that to it.
So moved. Second.
Okay, a motion's been made by Member Greger, seconded by Member Lynn to amend the agenda to add the possibility of an executive session. And if we do that, it would be after the testimony for the non-compliance hearing. So is there any other changes while we're amending the agenda today that anybody would like to make? Okay, seeing none. All those in favor of modifying the agenda like we talked about, say aye.
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 Okay, we'll add that. Okay, now it's time for a non-compliance hearing for an order to vacate and repair or demolish a dangerous building located at 510 Lumber Street, Island Trailer Court, space W. So at this point, I believe the borough building official will give his testimony. Is that you, Joe?
Oh, my gosh, I forgot all about the swearing of people in. Yes, we have to swear everyone
in. Everyone, as they come forward? Or everybody, can we do it all at
once? Will be testifying today, it would be nice if I could.
If I could swear them all in right now.
So anybody in the audience that's interested in participating in this non-compliance hearing, please come forward and be sworn in so you could testify.
It is.
Maybe possibly testifying. Yes. I'm nodding at Joe. I don't think you were involved, but welcome to
everyone. No, go ahead. Okay. Anyone else that thinks they may be testifying at all during the non-compliance hearing? All right. Thank you, everybody. Raise your right hand, please.
Thanks.
Do you all swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth? I'll have you all sign forms later. Okay. Thanks.
Okay, we had six people get sworn in to testify. So Joe Bertinoli would be the first one. He's the building official for Petersburg.
Thank you, Assembly. Well, it's you got the packet in front of you, and we were here once before when we decided to do this, but we'll start off with the basics here and just give you a little bit of where we're at. First off, you know I'm Joe Bertignoli. I'm the building official. I've been in the building trades for over 40 years. I started as a carpenter and a house builder, and then I came to the city in 91. And then I started out as a maintenance worker for the city then. Well, I came to the borough in Petersburg long before that, but in 91 I started working for the borough's maintenance and doing building inspections also under the building official at that time. I started off right away, and then I gradually worked into getting my building inspector credentials, plans examiner credentials, plumbing inspector credentials, so I could do all aspects of it. A little over 2 years ago, I became the full-time building official when the other one retired. So I did, until then, I did both maintenance and inspections on city buildings. I became the building official and the / code enforcement officer, which is a new position. It's my job to go into these building projects around town and see if they comply with building codes, building safety, and ordinances of the city of Petersburg. It's a dual purpose there. Building codes are meant to protect people who are living in the house and also to protect future owners for the value of the house along the ways. So I feel that through all the years I've been walking into all of these buildings, commercial, residential, and such, it makes me more than qualified to see a dangerous situation when I walk into a building. I can, I find that going into friends' houses, it's hard not to pick out code violations in their house. You know, the stairway, but you don't say. So I notice, out of compliance, unsafe situations in houses. So, but the reason we're here is, you know, is that we did face this thing in a trailer on 4W. I'm just going to point out some of the things in the packet that you already have in front of you. I'm not going to go through the packet page by page because you had to read it. It's quite lengthy. It's 80-some pages. But I would like to go over the timeline and some of the things that I noticed in this trailer when we had to go in there. Not only is it unsafe to live in, it's unsafe for anybody in the surrounding area, immediate neighbors. You know, up in that area, trailers are pretty close together. And when you have a situation where one trailer or one structure, no matter whether it be a trailer house or whatever, is dangerous, it poses a danger to your neighbors. And that's part of why codes are there, too. It's there to protect your neighbors. Seeing the dilapidated state of this trailer, in my opinion and in others, too, it would be far, far too excessive an expense to repair it up to standards that that we would deem safe for themselves. I'm not going to talk about all the electrical. Gary Morgan, the electrician from Power and Light, is going to speak a little more in depth about the electrical issues that pose a danger to the residents and the immediate neighbors. He'll talk about a little bit about the incoming, the pedestal. He'll talk about the creative power hookups that they did on the pedestal there, which were not only dangerous, and also about the interior, and you show the interior violations in there, noting that not only are we're talking about a trailer that people are living in, and it's not just adults, there's children living in this too, you know. So, and they, you know how they are inquisitive about all these open wires and open receptacles, sticking their fingers in there. Yeah, not a good situation. So I'd like to look at, you know, talk about the timeline a little bit as we proposed it here. We went back when this first problem was first noted. It was noted that there was power thieving going on up there when the meter reader was up there, and they noticed that there was power coming and lights and fans and music coming from these trailers that had been disconnected months previous. So it was kind of figured out how they were doing it, and this was not the first time. I'd like to note that I believe it was three times that this same trailer has been noticed for robbing power. And Gary will talk a little bit about the methods that they, the first time they did it, they just boot it and then they played it, but they found ways to circumnavigate all of those things. When we did notice this power thing, we went and got a summary abatement, it's called, which allowed us to go into the trailer and see what dangers were posed. And it's a summary abatement. It's kind of an emergency order that we were able to go up there with the police officers, and we swept through the trailer, and the people moved out that were there, and that's where we photoed and noticed all of these violations happening. In the dangerous situation with what was going on, so at that time, after the summary abatement, we went and boarded the place up, and so we couldn't allow anybody to live in there at the time until things were corrected, but we did find out shortly thereafter that they had removed the boards from the notices or from the from the walls, and we're living in there again. So at that time, we went to the court and got a search warrant to go in there and reissue and board it up again. And I believe that was shortly after. I've contacted Mr. Dawson several times, trying to get him to either get the people out of there or we were going to, you know, board it back up again, or give us permission to board it back up without the court order. Well, he's not an easy person to get a hold of, so we ended up going through with the court order. And again, so we went back up there with this administrative search warrant on, I believe, October 26th, and with the police again, and they evacuated a tenant again, and so we reboarded it up again, this time a little bit more securely. We boarded up more windows, more doors, and plus, along with both of these times when we're going up there and boarding it up, we're posting first the dangerous building signs. Secondly, we posted the search warrant. We posted the dangerous building sign the second time. So the properties were posted on all doors and on the shed that we boarded up too. Back in December, you know, when it was appears that nothing was going to happen, that's when we came to you and asked for, you know, to schedule this hearing so we could determine once and for all the outcome of this dangerous building as it's determined. Where was it? Yeah, as you look at on page 3 of your packet, it pretty much spells out what a dangerous building is and by our ordinance and what they are, and we'll cover on this again later. You know, dilapidated, unsanitary, fail to carry any of the amenities, and without water, sewer hookups. This, you know, they were had a catchment system for water. Electricity was, I said, cobbled together sometimes. At best, it was dangerous for anybody touching it. Unsafe, unsanitary. Yeah, the electrical portion of the buildings was very sketchy, to say the least. And so it did not meet up to any standards as far as codes or safety. Like, you know, as far as, and then it just to cover that too, in your packet there was quite a few pictures, and I just I know if you could make sense of a lot of these pictures, you know, like on page 9, the catchment system, that's what they used. They cut water off of that rusty roof that I question whether that was healthy water or not, into a tote, and then it kind of went through a hose, and then I don't know how they pumped it into the house. But on page 11 shows the electrical hookup into the pedestal when Gary Morgan and the rest of the power and light crew opened it up, and page 10 shows the electric the wires going underground. They were kind of buried under a piece of tin there. They had spliced wires with tape and such, but it was, you know what the soils are like down here and underneath the ground, and it was just, if it rained, it was in a puddle of water, and I don't know why this stuff didn't short out. Well, I do know why it didn't short out, because they weren't on any breakers. I mean, a lot of the stuff was bypassing breakers, and then shows the wires coming up and how he hot-wired into the under the pedestal, and I said, Gary will talk a little bit more about that. Going back into some of the other pictures, and you see some of the code violations as we go along in the electrical section inside. You have overloaded open boxes, spliced wires, open breaker boxes, and a lot of those breakers, I don't even know if they were acting as breakers or if they just bypassed those either. I mean, Gary could see that. You see the wires going into switches and rheostats with wire nuts exposed. All of this is against code. You see on page 15, you see a multiple receptacle outlet plugged into a multiple receptacle outlet plugged into a multiple. It's like, I counted 6, 7 receptacles plugged into that one box, which is open and wired nuts exposed. But they got Christmas lights up. Some of the other ones, you know, as you go on, 16 is another open box, 17 is more open, and then it shows on 18, shows the catchment system again. That is, kind of goes into the, I'm not quite sure where the hose comes out of the, one tote goes into the other tote, which goes into the hose, which goes into the house, which, not code, that's all I'm saying. 19 is one of the more dangerous situations that we had here, and that's that hot water heater. That is that just shows a weed burner just kind of resting on something there. I'm not sure what it's propped up on, going into the bottom of this pressure vessel, which is a water tank, is a pressure vessel, and it shows it, you know, just plugged right in there. 20 shows the water heater exhaust pipe, which is going out of the house, which you can see the T111, it's all charred around there, and that's indication that we're just this close to burning. You know, once it gets charred like that, ignition is not too far away. The one thing that makes the hot water heater, why it's so against code, and other not just the weed burner, is it has no TNP valve on it. And for those of you who don't know what it's a temperature and pressure valve, which, if your hot water tank gets over a certain pressure, it flips up and lets hot water out so it doesn't explode. And if you've ever seen that YouTube video of a hot water tank, they put it into a shed and they tested to see what happens when it goes over pressure. It's a rocket. It's basically what it is. It blew up the shed, shot through the up couple hundred feet, and then it came down Lord knows where. So that in my itself is just an accident looking for a place to happen. So, and it's a heavy fire hazard too. Obviously, not only a danger too, and then with that explosion, if that thing were to go, it would take out the neighbor's house too. So that's just kind of some of the pictures. So, you know, you can look at the rest if you have any questions. It just shows whatnot. But and as far as a dangerous building is what we're classifying this thing as. We're classifying it, and there's lots of reason. And the definitions are all there in the ordinance, and it says those that had become so dilapidated, decayed, unsafe, unsanitary, or so utterly failed to provide the amenities essential to decent living, they are unfit for human habitation, are likely to cause sickness or disease. And that pretty much sums it up, because without water services, without sewer services, no heat methods other than occasional water catchment that they did have coming off a rusty roof, going through what pipes, we don't know. It's pretty much unfit. Can it be repaired? Sure, anything can be repaired. Can it be repaired at a reasonable fee or reasonable cost? I don't think so. I believe that, you know, the rates that electrician charges, if you could get an electrician to go in there and touch this, you would be talking more than the trailer's worth every day he's in there. I mean, you're talking them, what, $80, $500 a day for an electrician? That's probably cheap. So, you know, you've got 2-3 days in there, you got $1,500 into a trailer, which if you go back in the cost, the trailer's assessed at $3,000, and the only reason it got to $3,000 is because we looked at the assessment and it said $10,000, and we could not believe it. So we asked the assessor, says, how can, if you've seen this, how can this, we showed him pictures, how can this trailer be with $10,000? So he lowered it to $3,000, and I think it still could go lower than that. But the you see in your packet also that it shows a bill of sale when Ryan Dawson bought this trailer in 2014. It was he paid $500 for it, and maybe back in 2014 when it had power and everything else and was hooked up legally, it may have been worth $500 for somebody to stay in. You know, I mean, it was, but throughout the years with the way they rigged the power up. I mean, and they had, and I think Gary's going to touch on this a little bit too. They had a, not just cobbling together the electricity, which made it, they had a DC power system going in there too, which they integrated it. So in case there was no power coming from the pedestal that they were robbing, they could, they ran off of batteries. I think that's why we have a lot of batteries missing around boats. Some of the violations that you've seen the sanitation violations as far as water and sewer. You've seen the electrical violations. The plumbing violations I add up. Is the building is 50% damaged or decayed or deteriorated from its original value or structure? Yes, more than 50% from its original value, and that's one of the that's in the ordinance also that if it is more than 50% decayed, damaged, or whatever. Deteriorated. It deemed it shall be demolished in the cases of or if it can't be repaired. Cost, demolition costs. Demolition costs far exceed what that trailer's worth. And the borough. Estimated it, Public Works estimated it would be approximately $10,000 to get rid of that thing. And that's an estimate of what it cost us to demo those other two repossessed trailers that the borough repossessed. And I mean, mainly that is man hours, equipment time, some dump fees, but that's that has to happen. The proximity to other trailers, the proximity to power lines dictated the extra cost, because it's extra time, because they can't just go in there. If they could just go in there with the excavator and a dump truck, pick it up and move it, it would be done in no time. But they had to take the small backhoe, kind of finesse in there so they wouldn't wreck another trailer, so they wouldn't, you know, because they had a power line right in front of those other trailers. And I believe the situation is the same with this one. So that being said, I'll let Gary's going to touch on the electrics. So I guess in end result, what I'd like to see and what I think should happen is my recommendation is that the assembly order a 30-day repair for the trailer at 4W. No person shall occupy that structure in this interim time, and should no action be taken to remediate the problem within that time frame, the borough will go in and remove the structure without any further notice. And all along through this whole process, we have been concurring with the attorney. So it's not through the notices, through the legalities. So we've been covering our bases and, you know, dotting our I's and crossing our T's to make sure that we were doing things right. Because, again, we're kind of like with that repossession, we're kind of treading on, you know, new ground here. We've never done that before. But she did advise us that once we go through the 30-day process, if nothing takes place, again, I think for anything to take place, it would be far too expensive to endure for most people, that we have the authority or the will, if you want, to go in there and remove it. That's all I got.
Is there any questions by any of the assembly members of Joe? And other people that are going to testify have the right to ask questions as well of any of the people giving testimony. So, no questions? All right, Joe, thanks. You. Was there other city, borough officials, employees that were going to give testimony to this issue?
Hello, I'm Gary Morgan. I'm the electrician for Petersburg Municipal Power and Light. I kind of wrote a summary of what I saw at this location back when we walked through it. It was in September 9th, 2016. And we took approximately 50 photos just to compile this code violation list. By no means is it comprehensive. It's one of those things I could have kept going. I just kind of put a reasonable amount of time into it. And it's my opinion that this residence is an absolute fire and electrical hazard. Anyone that would try and live in that residence is putting themselves at risk. Just to kind of go through the electrical system, Joe did a pretty good job of explaining a lot of the more important areas. But some of the things I saw, almost every outlet and lighting outlet had been removed with the wires sticking out of the boxes. I think you can see that on most of the pictures. Some of the circuits were abandoned and then refed using extension cords, which is why all the boxes were open and exposed. I assume that they had problems with the electrical system, and that's why they had to repower, refeed with electrical cords to try and make certain areas work. It's obvious that in some places that it was kind of a trial and error. We did see some scorch marks. When we went to investigate the power theft, they'd gotten creative several times. And the last time, the most dangerous way they did it was completely bypassing the main breakers. So basically what they did is they opened up the side that the power and light has feeding the trailer before the meter. There's no fuse, no circuit breaker protecting this. And they tapped into it using a screw and an extension cord. So literally they had nothing that would trip that circuit. They could have heated up that wire with more and more stuff until they had a fire. And that was what was feeding this trailer. So, and then you see four or five different ganged multi-outlet devices plugged into these extension cords that have no protection. So the amount, what causes fires is too much amperage on a cord that can't support it. So it heats up. And it's just a shock to me that this didn't burn down. So I found some other, I could go on and on, but I think, electrical panel underneath the kitchen sink with no cover, that was the main feed into it. I think there's a picture somewhere there in the packet. Absolutely no. All kinds of things. No GFIs in the bathrooms. No GFIs in the kitchens. Anywhere where there's water involved, you should have GFI protection. None of that. You can see by the pictures, it was just very inventive how they were able to power this. And then on top of that, they also had a DC system where they'd taken car batteries and an inverter and powered up circuits. Hopefully that wasn't the same time that AC power was being supplied to the trailer, because all kinds of things can go wrong there. Plus the wiring is not sized for DC amperage. Overall, it's just not to code. The other thing I think we wanted to talk about was what would it take to bring this back to code? I think Joe kind of mentioned a little bit about this, but one thing about mobile homes, I've been an electrician since 1994. I've worked in several states and internationally as well. Mobile homes aren't made to be remodeled. They're meant to be built one time at a very quick, cost-saving way, manner. The walls usually are 2 inches thick instead of a standard 2x4 or 2x6. They're 2 inches thick and usually foam-filled. So you can't, if there's a wire that's gone bad in there, you can't just tear open the wall and rewire it. A lot of times you end up tearing apart the whole wall structure trying to repair a single wire. The past companies that I've worked for, when there was any kind of a remodel on a mobile home, we would just refuse to work on it. The liability there was just too great. And like my boss said, this building is more of a liability than an asset. It's just, I wouldn't spend the time on it, even if it was my free labor. This wouldn't be worth it. So I talked about the three times that they stole power. They had three different instances. One time they broke the seals, removed the boots on the back of the meter, and reinstalled it. The second time they stole power from the adjoining service. Then the third time they bypassed the meter completely. And you can see scorch marks where they tried to connect the wire. They must have done it a few times. They were very brave. Some of the other things I saw, too, that the original feed to the building wasn't to code. It had a splice underneath the building with no protection, no waterproofing. It was just happened to be up off the ground, and I think that's what kept it from having an issue for so long. That's all I can think of. Anyone have any questions about the pictures or...
Any questions of Mr. Morgan about the conditions of the electrical in this trailer? Okay, I don't see any. Gary, thanks.
Thank you.
Is there any other borough employees that are going to present testimony today? Okay, seeing none. The next people that can testify under this hearing are the owners of the subject property. Are the owners in the room to testify? Okay, seeing none. Is there any witnesses to be presented by the owners or here representing the owner? There's none. Is there any other interested parties in the audience, occupant, mortgagee, leasee, or any other person having an interest in this building? Seeing none, we'll move forward. So with that being said, we're at the point in the process where I think it's up to the assembly to deliberate this. And do we want to deliberate this in a open session or recess into a executive session?
Go ahead, Bob. I'm comfortable doing it in open session if...
All right, so...
I have no preference.
Can you hear us on the line, Cindy and Kurt? Are you following along with this?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, Mark, and I agree with Bob. Let's leave it in the open here. This is a no-brainer.
Okay.
Concur.
All right, so according to the information given to us by the attorney, the assembly is to make and adopt written findings of fact from the testimony and evidence offered at the hearing as to whether or not the building in question is a dangerous building within the terms of Petersburg Municipal Code 9.20.010 and also 9.20.080. As part of its decision, the assembly can either, one, adopt written findings of fact at the meeting for the mayor's signature, two, direct the building official to prepare a draft written finding and of fact and order for its consideration at the next meeting, or three, it can delegate to the mayor the preparation, approval, and signing of written findings of fact, order consistent with the deliberations and decisions. So I guess we would, as suggested by Mr. Bertinoli, was to issue a order, 30-day repair order, or the building can be removed or demolished by the borough. So we need to have a motion, I would think, along those lines is what we're gonna, how we're gonna proceed.
So move.
So the 30, we're gonna proceed with the order, 30-day order to repair, or Debbie?
Actually, and I might ask for Liz's help here, but you guys should go to, please, in your supplemental packet to page 80 through 82. These are draft findings of fact that either if you're all going to approve them now, you should, you know, go ahead and go through them and change, modify them if needed. You need to decide one of the three in H, how it's going to happen, whether you're going to do it now, whether you're going to direct the building official to prepare them for your next meeting, or delegate to the mayor to approve the findings of fact. But you do need to go over it. You need to talk about the findings of fact.
Yeah, so...
Yes?
That's why it might have been better to go into executive session, but this will be okay. Fine. We could just sit here and talk about it. So let's take... Do you guys have a copy of this... Kurt and Cindy, did you get that email?
Yes, we did.
Okay.
Yes, we do.
Okay, so, Liz, do you have any input on this?
Mr. Mayor, I just wanted to point out that these draft findings that Debbie referred to support Joe's recommendation that you do the 30-day order. And then if the repairs are not made in 30 days, then the borough would proceed to demolish the structures. And it's the trailer and then also a small shed that's behind the trailer. I think when you go through this, basically it just reiterates every point that's made in your packet and that Joe brought up in testimony. But it just really, we really just need to make sure that we have all the facts laid out in writing, that you acknowledge that these facts were brought forward as part of the record, and then you're adopting and making this, adopting an order as a result of consideration of these facts.
Okay, so I have a question. If we proceed this way and we give the 30-day notice to repair or remove it on their own, if that doesn't take place, then the borough is liable for the cost to remove it, or does that, do we send a collection notice to the owner of the property and see if that gets us anywhere?
We can try, but what the plan would be at the end of the 30 days, if the structures were not repaired or removed, the borough would do that. We would absorb those costs and attempt to recollect. I expect the likelihood of collection probably pretty low, but we would do what we could.
Okay. You have the authority in ordinance to pursue collection.
But along the same token, you can't squeeze water from a rock either, for that matter.
Nancy, you got a comment?
Does any of this responsibility fall on the McMurrins who own the park?
Steve, can you answer that?
Not directly, but I believe Liz and others have been meeting with the McMurrins prior to this even to talk about some of the condition of some of the structures that are up there, and with the hope that we can get them to be a little more proactive in the future on managing this. Am I correct, Liz, that they don't have much say other than telling people they need to move their trailer?
And we talked to the attorney about this exact question, and the attorney didn't think that we could pursue the park owner liabilities.
Okay, so we couldn't ask for any retribution from the park owner, the people that own the trailer park.
That was the attorney's thinking.
Okay, thanks. So it sounds like we need to make sure all these findings of fact are read into the record, or make some kind of a motion that we enter these 12 items into the record. And then if that's the way we're going to go, issue to vote to order a 30-day repair or remove condition, that's the way we should proceed. So is there a motion?
Go ahead, Debbie. Were you going to say something?
I was going to suggest that you just read out loud these draft findings of fact. And as you go through, if you see anything that should be amended, say so at that time. I'll make notes. And then at the end, make your motion to whatever it is you decide to do.
Okay. So we'll proceed in that manner. Does that sound good with the assembly? I mean, I don't know if it's the right protocol, but if we're to do this again.
You think motion should be first?
I think we should have this information so we can digest it beforehand, if it's at all possible. But maybe we can't until it's presented as testimony at the...
You did have it in an email.
Okay. I didn't read that much in depth then. Okay, so here we go. The assembly finds the subject buildings constitute dangerous buildings as defined in Petersburg Borough Code Section 9.20.010 based on the following facts. One, on September 9th, 2016, after inspection and investigation, the building official deemed the building located at 4W Island Trailer Court, 510 Lumber Street in Petersburg to be dangerous buildings and a nuisance under the borough code, and posted proper notice at the property. The owner of the building was determined to be Ryan Dawson. Is there any changes anybody would like to make to that, or is item one acceptable?
Acceptable.
Okay, on September 12th and September 28th, 2016, notice in compliance with borough code section 9.20.050 was given to the owner of record, an occupant of the mobile home, and the trailer park owner, providing information as to the necessary corrective action. So, any change in that, or are we all good with that? Okay, we'll move on to three. On November 7th, 2016, the borough building official notified the assembly of the owner's noncompliance with the notice and failure to perform the required corrective action. On December 5th, 2016, the assembly scheduled a public hearing for noncompliance. Okay, we've crossed that bridge. Is everybody okay with that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, on December 8th, 2016, notice of said public hearing was provided to the owner of record of buildings, Brian Dawson, and owner of record of the property, Patrick and Patricia McMurrin, as required by borough code. Okay, so we've done that. On December 15th, the borough official provided a copy of his noncompliance report dated December 9th, 2016, and all attachments to the owner of record of the buildings, Ryan Dawson, and the owner of record of the property, Patrick and Patricia McMurrin. Okay, so that is Item 6, any changes to any of this? Or item 5? On January 3rd, 2017, the Petersburg Borough Assembly conducted a duly noticed public hearing. And at said hearing, Joe Bertinoli, building official, and Gary Morgan, Petersburg Municipal Power and Light Electrician, provided oral testimony and written evidence that the buildings are so dilapidated, decayed, unsafe, unsanitary, and so utterly fail to provide the amenities essential to decent living that they are unfit for human habitation or are likely to cause sickness or disease so as to work injury to the health, moral, safety of general welfare of those living therein due to the comprised electrical systems and dangerous water heating system, such that the buildings are dangerous buildings under Borough Code Section 9.20.010, Section E. Okay, we all good with this so far?
Yes.
At said hearing, Joe Bertinoli, building official, and Gary Morgan, Petersburg Municipal Power and Light, provided oral testimony and written evidence that the buildings are unsafe, unsanitary, or dangerous to the safety or general welfare of the people of Petersburg due to the comprised electrical system, dangerous water heating system, such that the buildings are dangerous buildings under Borough Code Section 9.20.010, Section I. Okay, we all up to speed here. At said hearing, Joe Bertinoli, building official, and Gary Morgan, Petersburg Municipal Power and Light Electrician, provided oral testimony and written evidence that the buildings are in violation of numerous provisions of Petersburg Borough Code, namely the National Fire Prevention Association 70-211, portion of the National Electrical Code adopted by the State of Alaska and by the borough under Petersburg Municipal Code 14.16.010. such that the buildings are dangerous buildings under Borough Code Section 9.20.010, Section J. Item 10, at said hearing, Joe Bertinoli, building official, provided tax assessment information demonstrating that the buildings are more than 50% damaged or decayed or deteriorated from their original value or structures, such that they are subject to demolition under Borough Code Section 9.20.020, Section C. Item 11, at said hearing, Joe Bertinoli, a building official, and Gary Morgan, Petersburg Municipal Power and Light Electrician, provided oral and written testimony that the occupants of the building had illegally diverted power on three separate occasions. And item 12, at said hearing, Joe Bertinoli, building official, provided a written testimony that the buildings were reoccupied in violation of the borough's order on September 12, 2016. Given the multiple incidents of diversion of power and the numerous code violations at this location, creating conditions that render these dangerous buildings and the lack of remedial action by the building owner, it is now necessary and appropriate to take immediate action to abate the dangerous buildings. Okay, so those are the 12 items and a little testimony at the end.
Well done.
So, you on board with that, Kurt and Cindy?
Yes, I am.
Okay. So,
I am, too.
Okay, so the order would be, is this what we should put in the form of a motion, then?
I would think so, yes.
Okay, that's the way I read it. And I can't make a motion, so I would entertain a motion if someone wants to read the order, and we'll get a second to it.
So move.
So I would move.
Well, we should read it into the record, maybe.
So I would move to adopt written findings of fact for the mayor's signature.
What are you talking about?
Yeah, should we read the order so it's on the record, or just say it's the order provided to us on page 81 of our supplementary?
Yes, the order provided to us on page 80 and 81 of our supplementary.
Okay.
That works, Debbie?
That'll work.
Cool.
Second.
Okay, so any discussion on the motion? Clerk, call the roll.
Nancy.
Yes.
Bob.
Yes.
Kurt.
Yes.
Jay.
Yes.
Mark.
Yes.
Cindy.
Yes.
Okay, so it passes 6-0 that we will provide that order to the property owner. Okay, I guess I could have just done the same thing and said items 1 through 12 on page 81. Didn't have to read the whole thing, but.
You did right by reading it into the record, though, Mark.
I think
so
it should have been read into the record. So, okay, that is over. And we've already done approval of minutes. No, we haven't. We need a motion to approve the minutes of December 5th and December 19th regular meeting minutes. I'd entertain a